There we go.
Concerning the Ammonites, thus saith Yahweh, hath Israel have no sons? Hath he no heir? Why then doth their king inherit Gad, and his people dwell in his cities? Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will cause an alarm of war to be heard in Rabbah of the Ammonites, and it shall be a desolate heap, and her daughter shall be burned with fire. Then shall Israel be heir unto them that were his heirs, saith Yahweh. How, O Heshbon, for Ai is spoiled, cry, ye daughters of Rabbah. Gird you with sackcloth, lament, and run to and fro from the hedges, for their king shall go into captivity, and his priest and his princes together. Wherefore, glorious thou in the valleys, thy flowing valley, O backsliding daughter, that trusted in her treasures, saying, who shall come unto me? Behold, I will bring a fear upon thee, saith Yahweh God of hosts, from all those that be about thee, and ye shall be driven out every man right forth, and none shall gather up him that wandereth. And afterward I will bring again the captivity of the children of Ammon, saith Yahweh. Concerning Edom, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, is wisdom no more in Teman? Is counsel perished from the prudent? Is their wisdom vanished? Flee ye, turn back, dwell deep, O inhabitants of Dadan, for I will bring the calamity of Esau upon him, the time that I will visit him. If grape gatherers come to thee, would they not leave some gleaning grapes? If thieves by night, they will destroy till they have enough. But I have made Esau bare. I have uncovered his secret places, and he shall not be able to hide himself. His seed is spoiled, and his brethren and his neighbors, and he is not. Leave thy fatherless children, I will preserve them alive, and let thy widows trust in me. For thus saith Yahweh, behold, they whose judgment was not to drink of the cup have assuredly drunken, and art thou he that shall altogether go unpunished? Thou shalt not go unpunished, but thou shalt surely drink of it. For I have sworn by myself, saith Yahweh, that Bozrah shall become a desolation, a reproach, a waste, and a curse, and all the cities thereof shall be perpetual waste.
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of information in scripture about the deportations of the tribes outside of Samaria and Judah. But we know that it happened. We know the Assyrians came into the land and they carried most of Israel away captive. And some of those excursions are recorded in Assyrian inscriptions. And they're only hinted at in scripture. But here we're in Jeremiah sometime after 627 BC. So why does their king inherit Gad? That means that the people of the Ammonites were moving into the lands that were formerly held by the Israelites that were left vacant with the Assyrian deportations. And that's the reason for this oracle against the Ammonites. But then, flee ye, turn back, dwell deep, O inhabitants of Dedan, for I will bring the calamity of Esau upon him. It seems that the Edomites are also already moving up into the lands of Israel.
There's other prophecies that would happen too.
Right. Ezekiel chapter 35.
It's like the darkness is always encroaching.
All the time, but I mean, the land was left basically vacant or sparsely inhabited. And that gave these other tribes an opportunity to move into what was essentially a more fertile, better land.
All right, well, I'll continue. I have heard a rumor from Yahweh, and an ambassador is sent unto the heathen, saying, gather ye together, and come against her, and rise up to battle. For lo, I will make thee small among the heathen, and despised among men. Thy terribleness hath deceived thee, and the pride of thine heart. O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, that holdest the height of the hill, thou shouldest make thy nest as high as the eagle, I will bring thee down from thence, saith Yahweh. Also Edom shall be a desolation. Every one that goeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss at the plagues thereof. As in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the neighbor cities thereof, saith Yahweh, no man shall abide there, neither shall a son of man dwell in it. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan against the habitation of the strong, but I will suddenly make him run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me, and who will appoint me the time? Who is that shepherd that will stand before me? Therefore hear the counsel of Yahweh, that he hath taken against Edom, and his purposes that he hath purposed against the inhabitants of Teman. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitation desolate with them. The earth is moved at the noise of their fall. At the cry, the noise thereof was heard in the Red Sea. Behold, he shall come up and fly as the eagle, and spread his wings over Bozrah. And at that day shall the heart of the mighty men of Edom be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. Concerning Damascus, Hamath is confounded, and Arpad, for they have heard evil tidings. They are faint-hearted. There is sorrow on the sea. It cannot be quiet. Damascus is waxed feeble, and turneth herself to flee, and fear hath seized on her. Anguish and sorrows have taken her as a woman in travail. How is the city of praise not left, the city of my joy? Therefore her young men shall fall in the streets, and all the men of war shall be cut off in that day, saith Yahweh of hosts. And I will kindle a fire in the wall of Damascus, and it shall consume the palaces of Ben-Hadad. Concerning Kedar, and concerning the kingdoms of Hazor, which Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, shall smite, thus saith Yahweh, arise ye, go up to Kedar, and spoil the men of the east. Their tents and their flocks shall they take away. They shall take to themselves their curtains, and all their vessels, and their camels, and they shall cry unto them. Fear is on every side. Flee, get you far off, dwell deep, O ye inhabitants of Hazor, saith Yahweh, for Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, hath taken counsel against you, and hath conceived a purpose against you.
Well, Hazor is basically a city of Naphtali. And I don't know who's dwelling there at this time, but perhaps Syrians had moved into it. Who knows? It seems to be the context here. The inhabitants of Galilee were already taken away by the Assyrians, but Damascus was a city very much populated by Israelites since the time of David, even though it was quote-unquote Syrian. But remember that Yahweh sent Elijah to anoint the king, and I think Elijah anointed Hazael the king of Damascus, as king of Damascus, but Ben-Hadad was one of his sons. And I actually think there were several different Ben-Hadads, because it was a traditional family name of the sons of Hazael. And that seems to be plausible. Elijah would have anointed Hazael king, probably close to 150 years before this, before the time of Jeremiah. So So we just have these oracles against all these surrounding nations that they're going to suffer on account of the Babylonians. But the Edomites, and I don't think Edom became a desolation in the time of the Babylonians. The Edomites were actually subject to the Babylonians. And I believe they subjected themselves to the Babylonians. And they were in league with the Babylonians when Jerusalem was destroyed.
At verse 14, Bill, where it says, come up against her and rise up to the battle. Gather ye together and come up against her. Is that coming up against
It could be up Edom? Against Jerusalem, yes.
Okay, because I thought that sounded like Jerusalem, but it mentions Bozra just before that.
I don't ever remember armies gathering against Bozra.
Yeah.
Doesn't Bozra means a fortress?
Yeah, but it was an identifiable town in Edom in biblical times. I mean, it's mentioned as early as Genesis chapter 36 as a town. And of course, Genesis chapter 36 is the descendants of Esau.
So at first hand, it's saying, I have made Esau bear. And then it's talking about leave thy fatherless children for thus say, you know, so he's bringing a judgment against Esau.
Yeah, I mean, it might be Bozra that's the subject there. But it seems to almost be prophetic of Jerusalem because all these nations joined in league against Judah and Jerusalem. And that's why Jeremiah is issuing these oracles against them.
And a son of man shall not dwell in it. That's like an Adamite will not dwell in it.
Yeah, but would Verse Edomites 18. Really Adamites? I don't know.
Oh no, I'm not a CFT clown. I don't believe that.
Yeah, I know.
Sodom and Gomorrah. Which verse is that
precisely?
18. As in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighbor cities thereof, no man shall abide there. So there was probably no Adamite in Sodom and Gomorrah at a late stage. Like Lot might have been the last man there.
Well, I mean, there were even Israelites that he died because the Israelites were appointed kings. The kings of Judah were appointing their own favorites or appointees as kings over Edom for all the time that Edom was subject to Judah, which is from the period of David all the way down to the Babylonian captivities of Jerusalem.
Yeah, and that's why last week I mentioned that I think that some of these last few verses are talking about Israelites in these other areas. Because if you look at 45 from 9, if grape gatherers come to thee, they not leave some gleaning grapes. And then if you go through 10, 11, 12, 13, 11 specifically is talking about preserving people and let their widows trust in me. Sounds to me like this could be all of these few verses about the punishments for these other lands is referring to the Israelites in these lands. 12 is also talking about them. It's saying, thou shalt not go unpunished. Thou shalt surely drink of it. So we're talking about the I mean, again, I'm not positive. I seen it.
Yeah, I've always leaned away from that because I know that these historical populations actually did exist at this time. Even though there were Israelites present, and in many cases, such as in Edom, Israelites were the rulers nearly up until Edom had revolted from Judah, which wasn't long before the Babylonian conquest. And they had gone over to the Babylonians as allies, so they weren't enemies of the Babylonians. In Damascus, there's a much better argument that can be made for a large population of Israelites there. And that's why Isaiah was, or that's why Elijah was sent there to anoint Hazael the king. But they were still separate from, after the divided kingdom, they were still separated from the control of Samaria. They gained their independence. There were other cities that were separate too, that were independent of either the kings of Israel or Judah. And I believe it was Lachish that was one of those cities.
Wouldn't Tyre be one of them?
Tyre was another one, yes. Well, I really believe that Hiram, when David became king, Hiram was subjecting himself to David in the course of their relationship. That's what that's really about. Hiram was realizing that he should be subservient to David, and he was, because Yahweh had anointed David king. But after the divided kingdom, no, Tyre was independent. They weren't under the pagan kings of Samaria. And they gained their independence.
So as Joe mentioned, to sort of kind of change the topic, 18, I would say, neither shall a son of man dwell in it. And that's referring to, well, it starts with 17. Down would be desolation. So there were some son of man dwelling in it, or going to dwell in it until he does this. Prophecy is saying.
Yeah, it 17. Also, Edom shall be a desolation, as in the overthrow there shall be no man shall abide there, neither shall a son of man dwell in it.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that when this prophecy was given, there were some son of man dwelling in it. Saying that when I do this, there won't be.
That seems to be that they weren't all bastards.
I'm sorry, somebody's...
That seems to be that indicates that they weren't all bastards.
Yeah.
But then that couldn't have really been Edomites, because all the Edomites were bastards.
Yeah. But like Bill, you were saying, like the kings of Edom, they were under tribute. I mean, Edom was under tribute, so the kings of Edom were Israelites.
Yeah, the kings were Israelites. And it says that... Okay. Edom revolted from the hand of Judah in 2 Kings chapter 8, in the time of Jehoram, and then Ahaziah became the king. And that was the son of Ahab. So it's during the time of Ahab that Edom had revolted. But that doesn't, perhaps the Israelite king in Edom revolted and led the Edomites away so that he could be his own kingdom, right? I mean, that doesn't, at that time, it was all the kings of Edom. Kings of Edom were actually deputies from Israel. And we see that in 1 Kings chapter 22 in verse 47. In the time of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and Jehoshaphat made peace with the king of Israel. Now, the rest of the acts of Jehoshaphat and his might that he showed and how he warred, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And the remnant of the Sodomites, which remained in the land in the days of his father Asa, he took out of the land, so he got rid of the faggots. Then there was no king in Edom. A deputy was king. And that means an appointee from Jehoshaphat in Judah was the king of Edom. And that practice must have been carried down from the time of David, because it was David who first subjected Edom. And now it's 200 years almost that they've been under the thumb of Judah. And Jehoshaphat died, and Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel. So that's about, that's probably about 840 BC, give or take a few years. That Jehoshaphat died. So that doesn't mean that Edom actually was broke away successfully from that time, because we see again in 2 Kings chapter 8,
microphone muted,
in the days of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, that Edom revolted again and made a king over themselves. So they revolted from the king that was the Israelite and made a king over themselves. They made their own king. And that was a permanent revolt, because it says, yet Edom revolted from the hand of Judah unto this day. Then Libnah revolted at the same time. And Libnah was a Levitical city in Judah. And that's right in 2 Kings chapter 8. So you had even cities of Judah revolting from the kings of Judah during this divided kingdom. And that went on. And I believe Lachish was also an independent city that revolted for at least some time. I remember that, but maybe I'm thinking about Libnah. I could be, right?
Hey, Bill, you know how you're saying a deputy ruled in Edom like a deputy of Israel? If you look at verse 19, after what David says, it says, and who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me, and who will appoint me the time, and who is that shepherd that will stand before me? So a shepherd is a governor of the people or a leader of the people.
Yes.
And he's saying who that I may appoint over her. So that's like a deputy being appointed over these people.
Right.
That's verse 19. So that seems to confirm a lot of what we're saying.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Well, even Job lived in the land of Uz, and that was technically in Edom, and he was an Israelite.
Job, yeah.
If okay. He was not an Israelite, it wouldn't have been an obligation for him to appear before the Lord three times a year, which was an obligation only given to Israel, to the men of Israel.
I definitely don't doubt he was an Israelite. Prophet of Israel, yeah, definitely had to be.
But the book's not understood that it happened during the Judges period. And it did. Because that was when an obligation was created, was at Mount Sinai.
All right.
And then the final proof of is the the young man of the kindred of Matram. What was his name? Elihu. Yeah. Elihu in Job chapter 32. Elihu, the son of Barakel the Buzite of the kindred of Ram. And Ram was an ancestor of David. And Job lived in the south, in the land of Uz, just over the border from southern Judah. And that's where the ancestors of David lived, in the south of Judah. Bethlehem is to the south of Jerusalem. So Elihu must have been a cousin of David. Job chapter 32.
Was the south of Moab ever in tribute to Israel? You know, there was part of Moab that was taken by the Israelites, and then there's part.
I believe David did subject them under tribute. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he did, right?
All right, should I continue?
And David did dedicate unto Yahweh with the silver and the gold that he had dedicated of all nations which he subdued. And that silver and gold would have been tribute of Syria and of Moab and of the children of Ammon and of the Philistines and of Amalek and of the spoil of Hadad-Ezer, the son of Rahab, the king of Zobah. So David subdued those nations. Those nations were all tributary to him. And Moab there wouldn't have been the territory of Israel that Israel took from Moab. It would have been Moab south of the Arnon in that context. Why would David have to subdue tribes of Israel? I mean, he was their king. So that must be Moab south of the Arnon.
And so Jeremiah might actually cry for the land of Moab because it's the land and not the people, because they might have had that land under subjection.
That could be. I want to go and study the Hebrew of that one day, I hope, if I ever get a chance, to be honest.
Microphone active.
Because we saw the different tenses and persons of the verbs from the Septuagint.
Microphone.
So there's definitely something fishy with the King James translation. Or with the Masoretic text compared to the Septuagint, right?
Yeah. Like, there's a few different questions about that. There's a few possibilities, hey?
Yes. That was our discussion last week, I believe.
Yeah, I didn't want to go back to it.
Because you got to sit for hours and examine that stuff.
Yeah.
The only time I really have a chance to do that is if I'm going to write a podcast. Because I have to spend several days preparing a podcast each week, it's the only time I have a chance to really study anything in depth. Is when I'm going to make use of it in a podcast. That's just the way it is. Otherwise, I would never get a podcast done every week, right?
Yeah, you'd just be a recluse.
Right. Exactly. Oh, I'll see you all in a month. I'll do a podcast maybe next month because I want to spend the next 3 weeks studying all the Hebrew to this section of Jeremiah, but which, if it's several chapters, would take a couple of weeks. Yeah. I mean, when I was in prison and translated the Christianity New Testament, I usually translated a chapter a day, and sometimes I would get two done. Sometimes, if they were a little short, or the Greek was easier, like the Greek in the Gospels is easier than Paul's Greek, or the Greek in the general epistles, so I could translate it at a faster rate. But still, a chapter a day would be a lot. It would, 60 verses a day. Because you want to be cautious and precise, right? So it would take some time.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Arise, get you up unto the wealthy nation that dwelleth without care, saith Yahweh, which have neither gate nor bars, which dwell alone, and their camels shall be a booty, and the multitude of their cattle a spoil, and I will scatter into all the winds them that are in the utmost corners, and I will bring their calamity from all sides thereof, saith Yahweh. And Hazor shall be a dwelling for dragons and a desolation forever. There shall no man abide there, nor any son of man dwell in it. The word of Yahweh that came to Jeremiah the prophet against Elam in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, saying, Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, Behold, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might, and upon Elam will I bring the four winds from the four quarters of heaven, and will scatter them toward all those winds, and there shall be no nation whither the outcast of Elam shall not come. For I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies, and before them that seek their life, and I will bring evil upon them, even my fierce anger, saith Yahweh, and I will send the sword after them, till they have consumed them, and I will set my throne in Elam, and will destroy them from thence, the king and the princes, saith Yahweh. But it shall come to pass in the later days that I will bring again the captivity of Elam, saith Yahweh.
Microphone activated.
So that's the end of chapter 49. Elam is Persia, so I have no issue with Yahweh bringing against their captivity.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, before I have a question, the idea that there are Persians still around, or descendants of Persians, goofy, this chapter really explains it thoroughly. There are no descendants of Persians, not just in Persia or anywhere in the world.
I seriously doubt there are descendants of Persians in the world that are legitimate.
Right.
What, but in Persia?
Anywhere.
First, Hazor was a city in Naphtali. And here it seems to be under control of the Syrians. But once again, the Israelites were all taken away by the Assyrians. So it seems that some of the Syrians moved down into Galilee. This, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might. That's in the days of Zedekiah, king of Judah. And that seems to indicate that the Persians are in league with the Babylonians against these other nations. And that's very plausible, because the Persians were, Elam and Media were subject nations to Nebuchadnezzar. And afterwards, I will set my throne in Elam and will destroy from thence the kings and the princes. And that throne seems to be that Achaemenid line of kings. It really does, from the time of Cyrus, who Yahweh described as a man of gold in Isaiah chapter 44, I think it is. There are older CI people than me that suspected that the Achaemenids were really of the Israelites in the captivity and could have been of Judah. I'm not going to dispute that. It's plausible, but I can't prove it, so I don't repeat it, generally. It's not my writing, let me put it that way. But I could speculate on it, because they did. And it seems to make sense when we read passages like this in Jeremiah 49, verse 38, it seems to make sense that they weren't really Persians.
Yeah, if it's his throne, you'd think that it would be Israelites.
Right. That it would be Judah. And that this passage seems to infer that that is the truth. And I've had that thought before in reference to this passage and a few other things, like Isaiah's description of Cyrus, who is supposedly half Mede and half Persian, but he could have been just a Persian by geography, because some of the Israelites were settled among the Persians. The Parthians are generally perceived to be Persians, but according to the historic records, it seems that they're Israelites. And I wrote on that subject, of course. So why not the Achaemenids? The Achaemenids. And I think if you look at where the Achaemenids had originated, that it makes even more sense that they might have been Israelites and not actually from Elam. But they ruled over Elam. So that's a strong possibility. That seems to be what Jeremiah is suggesting here in the end of this 49th chapter.
You know,
but I can't prove it. I can't prove it. There's no documents. There's only circumstances.
Some, like, Bible critics will say prophecies like "will be a desolation forever" haven't come true because, oh, look, there's bastards living in Palestine today. But if you look at verse 33, it says it will be a dwelling for dragons and a desolation forever. And the reason seems to be because there shall be no man abide there, nor any son of man dwell in it. So a desolation doesn't mean, oh, there's Palestinians living there. It seems to mean a desolation is when there's no son of man dwelling in it.
Well, yeah, right. The Palestinians are a desolation. They're all,
yes,
bastards.
Yeah, so a desolation doesn't mean, oh, look, You know, they've built some mud huts and stuff. So it's not a desolation. The prophet was wrong. But I mean, if there's no Son of Man dwelling in it, then it, yeah, it's a desolation. That's what that says to me.
If there's none of the people of God dwelling there, then it's a desolation. Period. But they don't understand that. I mean, mainstream commentators don't understand that. They think that just because they're people that they should be okay. And they could choose to be good or bad.
Yeah,
but right. That's not the truth. If they're bastards, they're wicked, and it don't matter what they choose to be. They're still going to be wicked. And they're still going to be in desolation.
They'll be like living in a sewer, and people think that's civilization.
Yeah. And if you look at those lands, I mean, they were in the Stone Age before Europeans came as colonizers, beginning with the Crusades and beyond, especially from the time of the English conquest of the region. And the English civilized them to a great extent. And even today, they build these marvelous buildings because they hired German engineers. It's German engineers that have built the modern Middle East. It's not the sand niggers. They're still capable of nothing but a squat hut, a mud hut.
Yeah, but they're going to the moon soon. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah, that's the moon. Freaking funny.
No, really, it's true. I mean, be a black guy in the moon soon.
Okay, that'll be funny.
You'll have to eat your words.
Right. Watch and see what happens to those niggers.
Can't we keep the moon pure and free from bastards?
No.
I'd be happy if they all went to the moon. That's where your 50 virgins are. Or 75 or whatever it is. Yep. Go to the moon, get your 75 virgins.
Oh, what is the meaning of 39 when it says, I will bring a...
You know, sometimes I think that has to do with the final promises of resurrection. But no captivity of Elam that we know of historically ever returned to Persia. Elam never really recovered. Elam didn't go anywhere. Elam was subjected to the Babylonians, and then it gained its liberty, and it was an empire in its own right, the Persian Empire, until the coming of Alexander. And even then, it didn't go anywhere. And after the passing of Alexander, the Parthians had taken over all the land and subdued Elam and subjected Elam and taken over all the land that was east of the Euphrates, where they could never overcome the Greeks that were west of the Euphrates, or the Romans later on. That they had the upper hand on a few short occasions, but not often. So the Parthians ruled over Elam for probably about 600 years until the Persians once again were able to assert themselves and overthrow the Parthians. But they in turn were overrun by the Arabs in the Islamic conquests. And for the most part, they've been bastards ever since.
Yeah, so it's referring to the time in the future Islam would be captives to other nations.
But this, I will bring again, the captivity of Islam might be the captives of Israel among the Persians. Think about that.
And the return of their captivity might not necessarily be to Persia.
Okay, well, that would go
along with...
Would
that be possible?
Sorry, but what Bill just said, sorry. That would go along with kind of what I've been trying to say. But I think so that way, but yeah.
Well, there were clearly many Assyrian Israelites in Assyrian captivity in Elam and in Media, all around the Caspian Sea, Sogdiana, Bactria. They were the Scythians, and they were distinguished from the Elamites and the Medes by that name Saka or Sakans.
So again, it's a using it as a geographic area, perhaps in 39.
That's very plausible. Now he said he will set his throne in Elam.
Yeah.
And destroy from thence the king and the princes.
Yeah. Making more sense now.
So if the Achaemenid throne was an Israelite throne, and it did away with all of its competitors, well, there you have it. I mean, that's a very plausible interpretation. There are so many little details of history that we don't have that make it difficult to understand these prophecies and when they were fulfilled. But once we have history, the prophecies are all very clear. So even if we can't get them all, we could get enough of them to make a general sketch of their fulfillment.
The word that that Yahweh spake against.
Where are you right now?
50 okay. Verse 1.
Wanted to hear it.
Huh?
David's thinking about people that might listen to the recording. There will be a few hundred of them.
The word that Yahweh spake against Babylon and against the land of the Chaldeans by Jeremiah the prophet. Declare ye among the nations and publish and set up a standard. Publish and conceal not. Say, Babylon is taken, Bel is confounded, Merodach is broken in pieces, her idols are confounded, her images are broken in pieces. For out of the north there come up a nation against her, which shall make her land desolate, and none shall dwell therein. They shall remove, they shall depart, both man and beast. In those days and in that time, saith Yahweh, the children of Israel shall come. They and the children of Judah together, going and weeping, they shall go and seek Yahweh their God. They shall ask the way to Zion, with their faces thitherward, saying, come and let us join ourselves to Yahweh in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. My people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to go astray. They have turned them away on the mountains. They have gone from mountain to hill. They have forgotten their resting place. All that found them hath devoured them. And their adversary said, we offend not, because they have sinned against Yahweh, the habitation of justice, even Yahweh, the hope of their fathers. Remove out of the midst of Babylon, and go forth out of the land of the Chaldeans, and be as the he-goats before the flocks. For lo, I will raise and cause to come against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north country, and they shall set themselves in an array against her. From thence she shall be taken. Their arrow shall be as of a mighty expert man. None shall return in vain. And Chaldea shall be a spoil. All that spoil her shall be satisfied, saith Yahweh. Because ye were glad, because ye rejoiced, O ye destroyers of mine heritage, because ye are grown fat as the heifer out grass, and bellow as bulls. Your mother shall be sore confounded. She that bare you shall be ashamed. Behold, the hindermost of the nation shall be a wilderness, a dry land, and a desert. Because of the wrath of Yahweh, it shall not be inhabited, but it shall be wholly desolate. Every one that goeth by Babylon shall be astonished and hiss at her plagues. Put yourselves in array against Babylon round about, All ye that bend the bow, shoot at her. Spare no arrows, for she hath sinned against Yahweh. Shout against her round about. She hath given her hand, her foundations are fallen, her walls are thrown down, for it is the vengeance of Yahweh. Take vengeance upon her, as she hath done, do unto her. Cut off the sower from Babylon, and him that handleth the sickle in the time of harvest. For fear of the oppressing sword, they shall turn every one to his people, and they shall flee every one to his own land. Israel is...
I'm sorry, that's a good place to rest. It's... We got 30-something verses left.
Yeah.
This, okay. The book of Nezahar rises to the throne in 606 BC, perhaps. And he actually ruled for 62 years, an incredible amount of time. And in the last 10 years of Babylon, maybe 10 years or so, there were several other kings and several pretenders. So like everything else that falls apart, that there's always emulation and men competing to take over an empire. But it didn't work because Cyrus, the king of Persia, had come, and he must have had subject to him the Scythians and the Medes and Parthians and other nations, many of which had actually descended from the ancient Israelites. So that's why it says Israel shall come, and much of Judah is in Assyrian captivity, and much of Judah is in Babylonian captivity by that time. So Israel shall come. They and the children of Judah together going and weeping, they shall go. So Israel comes and joins with remnants of Judah, and they go back up into the Caucasus mountain regions where Israel was inhabiting as the Scythians, and around the Black and Caspian Seas, and eventually ended up migrating into Europe. So this is drawing a portrayal of that release from Babylon that was afforded by Cyrus, the king of Persia, when he had conquered the Babylonians. But Chaldea shall be a spoil, and it shall wholly be desolate, and everyone that goes by Babylon shall be astonished. That didn't happen for another 900 years. I mean, Babylon did fall in become a small town from the grandeur that it had formerly had, but men were still inhabiting Babylon in 300 and 400 AD. And eventually it did become a hissing and a desolation. But it took a long time. And Peter was still there in 60 AD. Peter was there. That's where he wrote his epistles from. So this is indicating that the children of Israel would have a role in the fall of Babylon, and they did, but they weren't called Israel. They were called Scythians or Sakans or Parthians. They were called by other names. And the fulfillment of that is very clear in history. And people that deny CI, the truth of Christian identity, they deny that. But show me who the Israelites were that were with the Medes and the Persians, as Jeremiah states it here, that Israelites would come. I mean, that's all I have to say about the first 15 verses. I don't know if y'all got something.
I'll continue. Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First, the king of Assyria hath devoured him, and last, this Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, hath taken his bones. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will punish the king of Babylon and his land as I have punished the king of Assyria. And I will bring Israel again to his habitation, and he shall feed on Carmel and Bashan, and his soul shall be satisfied upon Mount Ephraim and Gilead. In those days and in that time, saith Yahweh, the iniquity of Israel shall be sought for, and there shall be none, and the sins of Judah, and they shall not be found, for I will pardon them whom I reserve. Go up against the land of Merathaim, even against it, and against the inhabitants of Pekod, waste and utterly destroy after them, saith Yahweh, and do according to all that I have commanded thee. A sound of battle is in the land, and of great destruction. How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How is Babylon become a desolation among the nations? I have laid a snare for thee, and thou art also taken, O Babylon, and thou wast not aware, thou art found and also caught, because thou hast striven against Yahweh. Yahweh hath opened his armory, and hath brought forth the weapons of his indignation, for this is the work of Yahweh God of hosts in the land of the Chaldeans. Come against her from the utmost border, open her storehouses, cast her up as heaps, and destroy her utterly. Let nothing of her be left. Slay all the bullocks, let them go down to the slaughter. Slay all her bullocks, let them go down to the slaughter. Woe unto them, for their day is come, the day of their visitation. The voice of them that flee and escape out of the land of Babylon, to declare in Zion the vengeance of Yahweh our God, the vengeance of his temple. Call together the archers against Babylon, all ye that bend the bow. Camp against it round about, let none thereof escape. Recompense her according to her work, according to all that she hath done. Do unto her, for she hath been proud against Yahweh, against the Holy One of Israel. Therefore shall her young men fall in the streets, and all her men of war shall be cut off in that day, saith Yahweh.
Now you know how prophecies, a lot of prophecies, have an immediate fulfillment, and when they aren't completely fulfilled, we imagine that they have a future fulfillment where the rest of the words of the prophet are fulfilled. And I believe that's true here, because none of this immediately happened to ancient Babylon. If we go back a little bit from where we left off the last time, for her foundations are fallen, her walls are thrown down. That did not happen in the time of the Persians, and it did not happen in the time of Alexander. The Persians, Cyrus took the city peacefully, and Alexander did not destroy the city. He took it, but he didn't destroy it, and he ended up dying there, probably from being poisoned. So here we have this description of the desolation of Babylon. And while Babylon lost its preeminence and became a secondary city to the Persian Empire, it was not destroyed. It was never destroyed. It fell into disuse because its harbor was silted up. And it fell apart. It basically disintegrated, as far as I know, sometime after the start of the Christian era, several hundred years after. The Jews were still using Babylon as a site when they wrote their Babylonian Talmud. And they had schools of rabbinical schools there in the early Middle Ages. So whenever Babylon fell into disuse, I don't exactly know. I don't know if medieval historians know exactly when it fell into disuse, but it did.
Microphone muted.
And of
microphone
course, in activated. Modern times, I mean, Babylon was dug out of the sand.
Sound muted.
1920s,
sound resumed. Microphone
where it
muted.
Was totally desolate, and the walls did crumble. So exactly when that happened, it could have happened during the Arab period, during Arab conquest. I don't know the history of that precisely, but it happened, but it didn't happen until sometime after perhaps 300 or 400 AD. But maybe that this is speaking about the vengeance of Yahweh and that the year of Zion and things like that. I'm thinking that this is a dual prophecy that has to do with the fall of Mystery Babylon as much as it did with the fall of ancient Babylon. You see what I mean? And those that come out from Babylon announce Yahweh's vengeance upon her. And that has more to do with the allegorical Babylon and Revelation chapter 19 than it had with anything historical in the time of the ancient Persians.
What is the vengeance of his temple?
Well, in the ancient world, it could be the vengeance of the destroyed temple, Solomon's temple that was destroyed. But today, it could be the vengeance for his temple, which are his people, which Mystery Babylon has deceived and has held hostage.
Also, I just thought, like, Christ is the temple of Yahweh God. So they destroyed Christ, they murdered him on the cross. And he could take the vengeance against them for that too.
I mean, you could say that. I can't deny
that's
that.
A bit far. That's a bit far.
But I see it more as the body of Christ in which he dwells. But that's fine.
Microphone
which are
muted.
The people of Israel.
Oh, I see.
Who are hostage to Mystery Babylon today. So I think this is a dual prophecy that has both applications, that it had relevance in the time of the Persians, but it was never entirely fulfilled. And that it's just as relevant and still relevant today in relation to Revelation chapter 19, when it will be fulfilled.
That's part of the reason why I think the Bible's a holy book is because it has these dual prophecies and dual meanings that all line up.
Right.
You know,
line is right up with Revelation chapter 18 and Babylon has fallen. Right.
Like a man, if it was just like a man just writing random stuff, he couldn't connect all that in that way to make like Revelation connect in that way and the prophets come true and everything like that.
Right, I agree.
All right. Behold, I am against thee, O thou most proud, saith Yahweh God of hosts, for the day is come, the time that I will visit thee. And the most proud shall stumble and fall, and none shall raise him up, and I will kindle a fire in his cities, and it shall devour all round about him. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the children of Israel and the children of Judah were oppressed together. And all that took them captives held them fast. They refused to let them go. Their Redeemer is strong. Yahweh of hosts is his name. He shall thoroughly plead their cause that he may give rest to the land and disquiet the inhabitants of Babylon. A sword is upon the Chaldeans, saith Yahweh, and upon the inhabitants of Babylon, and upon her princes, and upon her wise men. A sword is upon the liars, and they shall dote a sword. And they shall dote. A sword is upon her mighty men, and they shall be dismayed. A sword is upon their horses, and upon their chariots, and upon all the mingled people that are in the midst of her, and they shall become as women. A sword is upon her treasures, and they shall be robbed. A drought is upon her waters, and they shall be dried up. For it is the land of graven images, and they are mad upon their idols. Therefore the wild beast of the desert with the wild beast of the islands shall dwell there, and the owl shall dwell therein, and it shall be no more inhabited forever, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. As God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighbor cities thereof, saith Yahweh, so shall no man abide there, neither shall any son of man dwell in. Behold, a people shall come from the north, and a great nation, and many kings shall be raised from the coast of the earth. They shall hold the bow and the lance. They are cruel and will not show mercy. Their voice shall roar like the sea, and they shall ride upon horses, every one put in array, like a man to the battle against thee, O door of Babylon. The king of Babylon. The king of Babylon hath heard the report of them, and his hands waxed feeble. Anguish took hold of him, and pangs as a woman in travail. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan unto the habitation of the strong, but I will make them suddenly run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me, and who will appoint me the time? And who is the shepherd that will stand before me? Therefore, hear ye the counsel of Yahweh that he hath taken against Babylon, and his purposes that he hath purposed against the land of the Chaldeans. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitation desolate with them. At the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations.
Well, actually, Babylon in the time of Cyrus seems to have gone out pretty peacefully. I don't know what the fate of the nobles was of the Babylonians. Nabonidus was the king, and he was out fighting the Persians in the field and suffered defeat, but I don't know what his fate was. It's not recorded by the Greeks, as far as I remember. Belshazzar was left by his father to be in charge of the city when it was taken. And according to Cyrus and according to Herodotus, it was taken without much of a struggle.
So, Bill, these wild beasts of the islands, these are just random animals that have come from islands to dwell, you know, like birds.
Yeah,
and
well, I always pictured these as being the other races, the Arab races. And where it says all the mingled people in verse 37, that word is actually Arab, all the Arab people that are in the midst of her, all the mingled people. And even though they might have all been apparently white at that time, that they consisted of Chaldeans and Canaanites and Rephaim, and it was a collection back then. It was a cosmopolitan city, right? Just like every other cosmopolitan city, it's going to gather people of every race, just like New York today. It ain't no different.
Yeah, it sounds like the Babylon of today.
But I always thought the wild beast of the desert with the wild beast of the island shall dwell there, and the owl shall dwell therein. I always thought that was a reference to the bastard races, to the fallen angels and the bastard races.
Yeah, but you're a racist. Non-racist people like me, we think it's just random animals that they gathered up and they got them on the islands. And then they brought them to their land, and we're like, yeah, now we've got all these random animals.
Yeah, the wild beast of the islands actually swam there.
Yeah, maybe. And you see this other bit, mad upon their idols. Like, that sounds like us today. Great land, the land of graven images. So we've got all these graven images from all these beast people.
Yeah, except now our images are graven on glass from inside.
Coming back to the way that Babylon fell, when the Persians entered, they were already in the city and had taken over a great portion of it. And the king and everybody at the court had no idea. And they were just having a big party, like they did pretty much 24/7. And so most of this, and that's why it was so peaceful, because they had taken it by the time they even realized that it was being taken or had been taken, there was no struggle because it was already over. And it's figurative. It's kind of like the figurative Babylon today that we live in, where it's been taken over and everybody's having a great time and doesn't realize it.
Yeah, I could say there's an analogy there. They're all partying.
And there won't be like a, you know, a military battle, because, you know, it's kind of like the slippery slope. You don't realize you've already passed it, you know.
The sad is that's what they do, David. They party and they sing little songs and they dance and they mix and mingle.
I think the next two chapters are very long and would probably be good for next week.
Yeah, same. And we see again, like it says, so once the wild beast and that take over, neither shall it be inhabited from generation to generation. And people say, oh, well, it is inhabited today, so you must be wrong.
Yeah, by the wild beast of the island and the wild beast of of the desert.
Yeah, but they don't count because they're not, because later on you see once again that Yahweh says that no son of man shall dwell in there. The next verse, it says, neither shall any son of man. So when you see it won't be inhabited from generation to generation, the context is no Adamites there, you know. So it's not, oh, this random wild beast. So the prophet's wrong.
Yeah, we have to look at the context, Joe.
Right.
Just like Isaiah chapter 34. The wild beast of the desert shall also meet with the wild beast of the island, and the satyr shall cry to his fellows, and the sweet child also shall rest there and find for herself a place of rest.
I hate satyrs.
People would say we can't twist scripture.
Yeah, right. Well, why would it say mention satyrs in the King James Version? That they're actually Greek mythology satyrs. Half man, half goat. What kind of men are half man and half goat?
Some sort of mixed satanic abomination.
Yeah, like the bastards that live there now.
And that's why Christ in the judgment is like separating the goat people from the sheep people.
Yep. Because if you're not a sheep, you're evidently half goat.
But Jesus told us to love our brother.
Yeah, they ain't my brother.
Wait, what is that word? Ethnos?
Yeah, it is. It is in Matthew 25.
Right, now let's explain that.
You know, these people who are coming against Babylon that are holding the bow and the lance, they are cruel. They will not show mercy. That sounds a lot like us, you know, the big meanies.
Yeah.
We do not care one iota about Babylon. You can all go to hell. No mercy.
Yeah, we have that attitude, but not too many others.